Hello, welcome to another episode of Mycotoxins and Chronic Illness. And today we're going to do a deep dive into pulse electronic medical field, but not medical, magnetic fields, but in the medical world. And it's my pleasure to be speaking with Dr. William Pollack. He is a doctor in Maryland, and he's someone who has spent a long time doing a deep dive into how magnetic fields affect our bodies and how we can use them for health. And especially, I think everything electric, I have a feeling we're going to discover that Dr. Pollack has been involved with. So first of all, I want to welcome you. And can you tell us a little about how you, got into this area of electric and magnetic fields and the human body?
Thanks, Eric, for that introduction. I'm happy to be here, and we had a wonderful gallivanting discussion before we started, so that kind of set the stage for the energy that we're going to have as we go through this discussion. I'm a family physician by background. I'm conventionally trained and went through the whole process and was involved in managing several medical groups. I started the biggest family medicine group in the whole East Coast of the U.S., 14 family doctors. That was back in 1978, 80. So that was a long time.
Yep.
Time ago, and a long history in terms of the growth and development of family medicine. So while I was working in my group with all these other doctors, we had a couple of patients that ended up in the hospital with GI bleeding, gastric bleeding. And one of them almost died. But both of them had something in common.
Ibuprofen. Ibuprofen, yes.
Ibuprofen. So, yes. I said, I've been interested in peripheral things to medicine beyond this. I already had some sort of sense of the spirituality of things. And even though, you don't talk about that in medicine, you don't talk about that with your patients, right? But, I already had a sense that, we were pulling punches in what we were doing in medicine. So I said, well, I got to do something different than giving people ibuprofen for their pain. And I said, this is a form of insanity, right? You're killing people to treat their pain. They're not going to die of their pain, but they're going to die of what I treated them with. And so I said, I got to do something different. So that was back in 1988, 89. I decided to start to study acupuncture through a program at UCLA for physicians, for like veterinarians, physicians, dentists.
Yeah, Dr. Helms, yes.
Dr. Helms course, exactly.
Yes. Yes.
At that time, there were probably 300 of us in the country. And now there's thousands, 3,000, 5,000. So this is, it's substantially grown. But when I finished the program and I wanted to start doing acupuncture, since that was 1990, Madonna had not yet been on celluloid with needles in her back, showing most of her skin. Right? So at that point, okay, acupuncture is okay. Right? Now people started getting more curious and so on.
Yeah.
But I found when I started doing it, people would basically, stay away from me with those needles.
Oh, yeah.
Right? No, needles? What? No. Why would I do that? So I wanted to find another way to do acupuncture without using needles. And, of course, when you do acupuncture, you discover there's all sorts of things. There's moxibustion, there's a friction, there's light now, there's ultrasound. You can use all sorts of modalities to activate an acupuncture point. Well then, so what is an acupuncture point? It turns out that an acupuncture point is an electrical vortex. It's actually a funnel shape. And with the resistance going higher at the edges and then gradually decreasing towards the center. So when you put a needle into an acupuncture point, you're creating an electrical field in that acupuncture point. Because the metal of the needle is different than the electrolytes essentially of the body, the minerals of the body. And that contact causes small amounts of charge to be produced. And then that charge goes into the point, which then goes down the meridian. So we now know that an acupuncture point is an electrical point. And now we also know that an acupuncture meridian is a current, a line of current, a power line.
Yeah.
But it's not an AC power line, it's a DC power line, and it's a very, very low voltage line. But that line is constantly in motion. It has a 24-hour cycle, essentially. It's very slow motion, very low energy. So when you put a needle into an acupuncture point, you're taking a slow energy system and you're now activating it electrically, right? It's not, you're not introducing, although now many doctors use electrical connections to their needles to really power up the
needle.
So I couldn't use needles at that time. I started looking at magnets, and I discovered in the Orient that using magnets on ears and acupuncture points and so on. So, so that's very interesting. So let me try them. And I actually had an EMG done with a friend of mine with an acupuncture, with a magnet on acupuncture points. And we discovered, lo and behold, current increases in the meridian. So I started working with them more extensively and discovered, coincidentally, that magnets are doing a lot more than just stimulating an acupuncture point. So I put an magnet on a cut, not on an acupuncture point, but on a cut. I put a magnet on a wrist. I put a magnet on other parts of the body, an insect bite. And all of a sudden, crazy stuff started happening.
Wow, yeah.
People get better much faster than anything I ever experienced. Personally, I had a spider bite on my leg. I didn't even know I got bit. And I looked down on my leg, it was itching. I looked down and I had this big bite the size of a silver dollar. And it was swollen and red and itchy. So I put a magnet on it. And I was reading on my back porch, reading a book, sunny day, great, gorgeous day.
Yeah.
Put the magnet on it, and 3 hours later, I looked down, gone.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw a spider bite go away in 3 hours?
Yeah. No. I mean, the amazing power of kind of adjusting inflammation. I mean, this is what you're going to be talking a lot about.
Well, we're going to get into that, and that's an important aspect of what magnetic fields do. So this is a static magnet that I had on my foot. It's not a power magnet. It's a static. It's just a fridge magnet, basically.
Right.
Used. So static magnet means the magnetic field is just there. It's not doing anything. So the magnetic field in that case is static, but the body's dynamic. And there's blood flowing, and there's electrolytes flowing, and there's lymph flowing, and all sorts of things are happening. And the magnetic field is interacting with those flows, the natural flows in the body. And they still work. But I discovered after a period of time that they didn't work that well. So when I started working with people coming in the door with, you name it, complaints, right? The worst, I'm the easiest to deal with to the worst to deal with.
Right.
I have news for you. You don't want to be saying there, I have some news for you. Right? And they don't necessarily want to hear that news, but we have to deliver that message. So I started working with higher intensity magnetic fields, discovering they did a lot more. So a pulsed magnetic field that's moving, that's in motion, it's called time-varied magnetic fields, are much more dynamic. So now they're interacting with the sort of slow level activity of the body, and they're now adding another dynamic to the body. The phenomenal thing about magnetic fields, and one of the most important things about magnetic fields ignore the body.
Oh, okay.
The body does not exist to a magnetic field. If I put a magnet on my back and I have a magnetometer in my front, if I move my body in or out, the signal is exactly the same.
Oh, that is fascinating. I had no idea.
So basically, a magnetic field ignores the body. The body does not ignore the magnetic field. So as the magnetic field is passing through the body, it's like waving your hand over your palm. You start to feel that the wind or the breeze or whatever, or other energy if you're sensitive. As it does that. So as the magnetic field is moving through the body, it activates all sorts of stuff in the body. Another analogy is that a magnetic field is like a wind. And the only way you can tell that there's a wind there is, like, so for example, with a tree, is the leaves are moving.
Right.
If I'm standing at a distance and the leaves start moving, then I know there's a breeze, there's a wind moving through that tree. And how much they move, and whether the tree's rocking and rolling or the branches are rocking and rolling, it depends on the intensity of the wind. So in a sense, a magnetic field to the body is like a wind blowing through the trees. It's moving all sorts of stuff. And unfortunately for us, healthy cells ignore the magnetic field. So a breeze moving through a healthy tree or a wind moving through a healthy tree is going to wake the tree up. In fact, what it does, that motion of the branches and the leaves starts the sap flowing, and you get all kinds of piezoelectric charges moving in the trees as the tree wakes up. So the trees need wind to be more activated. Our bodies need magnetic fields to be more activated. Now, our bodies produce magnetic fields. We naturally, because we have atoms. Right. When we have atoms, we have charge. When we have charge, we collect charges with different molecules in those tissues. And then we have the tissues forming organs, and the organs are interacting with other organs, and then all the organs together are interacting with the orchestra of the body. So the magnetic fields are basically transducing and amplifying whatever happens locally. It cascades throughout the rest of the organism.
Right.
So they're incredibly dynamic. Healthy cells ignore the magnetic field. Cells that are not well use the energy. Now you're creating energy in the body. The cell says, ah, I finally have more energy.
Okay.
And then what happens with energy?
Yeah.
Healing, rebalancing, right? Dynamism, just more vitality in general. So essentially, that's what the magnetic fields are doing, is they're just waking everything up.
Right, getting them, yeah, and that's because usually sick cells are stuck cells.
They're stuck, exactly.
Yeah.
But what happens in a sick cell? Normally, a cell is like membrane channels, like they're windows and doors in a house. Air is supposed to be moving in and out of that house constantly.
Right.
Water, air, you name it. And so when a cell gets stuck, the charge builds up on the outside of the cell and decreases on the inside of the cell.
Oh, wow.
The cell can't finish its job. So now when you open up the membrane channels, you open up the windows and doors, now everything starts moving again, and those charges rebalance, and the cell is able to do what it's supposed to do.
Right, right. You know, and I think you're going to get to is that that'll help either go to healing or appropriate dying. Either way is the right way to go.
Absolutely. In fact, actually, one of the purposes of magnetic fields is to increase apoptosis.
Right.
Apoptosis is the death of a cell. All aged cells are supposed to die and be replaced by healthy new cells. So aged cells that don't die clog up the works, and they are more likely to also transform through chronic inflammation into cancer cells. So when you're actively, dynamically, and regularly, and routinely using magnetic fields passing through the body, you're kind of waking everything up. And you're keeping it sort of woke. Awoke. I better say awoke.
Awoke. Yes. Let's be politically correct. But no, this is just such an important part of people whose bodies seem to get stuck in chronic illness is giving them the right amount of energy to let the body move to the next level. And that's what we're always trying to do. And it's fascinating that you're able to do this with the PMFs. I mean, that's really amazing. So, tell us more, just keep going. How is more about the mechanisms? Because it's always nice when people can get pictures of how things are working.
So a lot of the principles of magnetic fields were discovered back in the 1700s, early 1800s. Through guys like Maxwell and a mathematician named Gauss and Faraday. Faraday was one of the first people to produce current by passing a magnetic field past a wire. So if you pass a magnetic field past the conductor, then you stimulate that conductor with the magnetic field rotating, this is how we produce power lines. This is how we produce AC. That's how Tesla created Niagara Falls and AC production. So using the magnetic field now to power a conductor. That conductor produces charge. And essentially what Faraday discovered is the higher and the faster that power is, the magnetic field is, then the faster and higher the charge is.
Okay, so the more rapidly the magnetic field is moving, the
more rapidly it's moving and the higher that it's moving. So you need those two components. You need peak, you need intensity, and you need time. So what you want to do is you want to increase the intensity and shorten the time.
Okay. So it's moving, yeah.
So a magnetic field that's going up like this is producing a strong charge response, energy response in the body. Then when it flattens out and does nothing across the top before it comes down, up there where it's doing nothing, there's nothing happening. There's no charge production because it's all up on the upslope.
Okay.
Of the front end of that magnetic field, the pulse of the field.
Okay.
And that's the principle behind a lot of what we're doing with magnetic fields. And then people talk about frequencies and so on. So the frequencies are less important than the ability of that magnetic field to actually produce charge in the body.
Okay. Well, right there, as you're talking about, you know, the charge in the body, can you tell us, to just make sure we can understand the difference between the some of the magnetic fields we're getting from background from our electronic equipment and the EMFs that the sicker you are, usually the more sensitive you are to. So what's the difference?
And that's a critical question. And so we can put that question aside of what the risks are with the kinds of magnetic fields we're talking about. We're talking about extremely low frequency magnetic fields.
Okay.
It doesn't matter about the intensity so much. It matters about the frequency.
Okay.
The higher the frequency of the magnetic field, the more likely it's going to get absorbed by the body. That's why you use a microwave oven to cook things, because it gets absorbed. And because it's absorbed, what happens?
Heats.
Exactly. So power line fields are not the same frequencies as microwaves, like Wi-Fi and microwaves and cell phones and so on. So the EMFs in our environment are dangerous, potentially dangerous to us, because the more we expose ourselves to them, especially in direct line to the microwave field, and the higher the intensity of the microwave field, then the more effect there is in the tissues. I don't know if you've noticed yourself, even if you have a cell phone away from your ear, don't touch the ear, but just away from the ear and have it turned on. The longer you have it turned on, the redder the ear becomes.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're cooking the ear.
Right.
Right.
And so this has to do with the frequency?
It has to do with the frequency. So extremely low frequencies pass through the body as if they were air. But there's even another big, big difference that rarely do people talk about. A magnetic field is produced by a wire that's conducting a current. And let's say my thumb is the wire, and the direction of my thumb is the direction in which the current is flowing in the wire. The wire is producing a magnetic field that's called the right-hand rule. It's rotating perpendicular to the flow of the current. And then that magnetic field is what interacts with the environment. What you're doing then is with pulse magnetic fields, the equipment that we use to treat people, they're shielded. So the wire has no contact with the body. The electrical field has no contact with the body. You're not going to get electrocuted. If you touch a wire for your lamp, it's not going to electrocute you because it's shielded. But it's still producing a magnetic field. Although the wire that's going out to a lamp then has to go break open that line, and then it creates a circuit. And then it comes back and rejoins the wire that came in. So they're now going like this, opposite each other.
Right.
Called Lenz's law. When you do that, they cancel each other out. So there's no magnetic field.
Okay.
But when they separate out, they go out like this and separate out, then you start to feel the magnetic field. And that's how most magnetic devices are designed. And Tesla discovered this himself as well. When you take a current and you open up the current, you open up the wires into a loop, now you have a magnetic field. You have a measurable, detectable magnetic field. And if you take a wire and then you take that wire and you loop it multiple times before it starts to come back, then you produce an even bigger magnetic field for the same amount of current flowing in that wire. So you're adding more and more loops of magnetic field into these coils that then amplifies the magnetic field even more. But this magnetic field, unlike a microwave oven, in a microwave, the magnetic field is going out like waves in the ocean. They just go on essentially forever until they hit an obstruction. The magnetic fields in a wire are going like this.
Oh, okay.
They're opening and collapsing, and opening and collapsing. The magnetic field in a wire produced by a wire is a closed loop. It has no beginning or no end.
Right.
It's like the Earth's magnetic field. It has no beginning or end. Even though we call them North Pole, South Pole, whatever.
Yeah.
There's no end. There's no beginning or ending of it. So these never ending loops or always closed loops then basically don't have the same effects as a microwave, which basically is blasting into the atmosphere long distance.
Okay. So basically the closed loop is recycling.
Exactly. And that loop, depending on the size of the magnetic field, can be big enough to go through an entire body or be small enough to go just deep enough just into a finger.
right,
or superficially enough into the hand, into the skin. But it's always going like this.
Okay. And the frequencies, where I mean, just to give us,
go like this, or whether you go like that. So the, if you, you, every time you go up, every time I go like this, you produce current in the body.
Right.
Current in the body. As it's coming back, it's also producing a little bit of current in the body. So that action going up like this is what most of the effects of the magnetic field are, that pulse of the magnetic field.
Right.
And then magnetic fields interact with all charged conductors. That's basic law of physics. What's the body?
Yeah. One big electrical field. Yeah.
It's a big battery. Right. It's an electrolyte soup.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not just sodium and calcium and so on. It's electrolyte soup. It's full of all kinds of electrolytes. And so magnetic fields interact with those electrolytes, and they produce charge. They amplify things, increase energy. And now the cells have stuff that they can use to balance themselves, repair themselves, and be healthier. So that's the difference. So the ELFs are very, very, very extraordinarily safe. The FDA has now, you may have your own opinions about the FDA, but the FDA has approved machines that are used to treat treatment-resistant depression.
Right. Transcranial, yeah.
Exactly. So we talked a little bit before we started about a very low intensity magnetic system. That's about one Gauss. So Gauss is a magnetic field. So the Earth's magnetic field is about half a Gauss on average.
Right.
Okay. That magnetic system that we're discussing is one Gauss. The transcranial magnetic stimulation devices, the machines, are 8,000 Gauss.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. And they're safe.
I think that's a
precaution. You have to use, you know how to use them properly to make sure you don't draw metal out of the body and so on. So, but beyond that, the field itself is actually pretty safe.
Okay. So the medical devices that you are using, where do they run?
What intensities?
Yeah.
Probably the lowest that I have worked with is probably about half a Gauss. And the highest that I work with now is probably somewhere around 10,000 Gauss.
Okay. Well, just while we're touching there, are there particular applications that one is better than the other?
The rule of thumb is, and we get into inflammation.
So okay. Well, I can skip a week.
Well, this is cycling back. This is why the intensity becomes important. Okay. I have a video on my website on drpollock.com that talks about why intensity is important, and it goes into two laws of physics. First law is Faraday's law. So that, again, the charge production is greater with the higher and the faster the charge, the magnetic field. The second is the inverse square law. And the inverse square law says that the magnetic fields, all radiation, whether it's cold or heat or sound, light, magnetic fields, whatever, everything drops off extremely rapidly. It's called the inverse square law or inverse square rule. So that, for example, a magnetic field that is 6,000 Gauss, right? You're applying a magnetic field of 6,000 Gauss, let's say.
Right.
So 6,000 Gauss, 7 inches into the body, drops down to 15 Gauss.
Okay.
In 7 inches, 7,000 Gauss drops, 6,000 Gauss drops to 15 Gauss.
That okay.
You have to think about what you're using it for. So if you're starting off with a magnetic field that is one Gauss, how deep is it going to go?
Yeah, not very. So you're working more like on the acupuncture or level.
Exactly. That's one of the first observations that I made about magnetic fields, is that they're working on the acupuncture system.
Right.
So the higher intensity fields now go much deeper into the body. Turns out there's research that has shown that magnetic field therapy, to decrease inflammation in the body, has to optimally be about 15 Gauss.
Okay.
Right, 15 Gauss. So for those of you who are listening and talk to other people who are selling you machines, the most important thing, there are other considerations, but I would say, based on Faraday's law, the most important thing to ask is, what is the intensity of this magnetic field? And if somebody's talking to you about magnetic fields and they can't tell you what the intensity is, run.
Right.
Because then they truly don't know what they're talking about. So on my website, I have a blog about adenosine, a stimulation of the adenosine receptor. So adenosine, as we know, makes ATP, which is the energy source of the molecule that is the source of energy in the body. ATP gets converted in the body by releasing one of the phosphate molecules. So ATP by itself does nothing. It's just static. It's just there and available. Like watching a cake is not the same as eating the cake, right? ATP is just watching the cake. So that cake has to be eaten. One of those molecules, phosphate molecules, has to be stripped off. And the stripping off of that phosphate molecule to create ADP is what releases the energy. So we produce the equivalent of our body weight in ATP a day. But every ATP molecule is recycling about 200 to 500 times a day. So we're constantly making and recycling ATP. And adenosine then becomes a root molecule for ATP production. But it also turns out that the ATP, the adenosine, has a docking station in the body. It has a receptor.
Yes.
And it activates the receptor to do the job of energy transduction in the tissues. So the adenosine receptor has been discovered to be one of the most important receptors in the body to deal with inflammation. So cycling back. So inflammation, you need 15 Gauss to be able to stimulate the adenosine receptor optimally, which then helps the adenosine receptor to quench inflammation. So once you have that information, and on the website, on that adenosine blog, there are tables that show you how the magnetic field drops off and what magnetic field intensity you need to treat deep in the body. So for example, if you're going to treat across the skull, and you're treating somebody with Parkinson's, or with MS, or with brain fog, or head injuries, concussions, then you got to treat across the head. If you're going to put a magnetic field here, it's got to reach the other side and deliver at least 15 Gauss. So
it's a lot.
Yeah. A lot. So assuming this is 6 inches from side to side, then to go 6 inches, you need a 4,000 Gauss magnetic field to deliver across the whole skull. Now you can treat on one side with 2,000 Gauss, then you're going to have to go back to the other side and treat the other side with 2,000 Gauss to be able to get the whole brain adequately stimulated. And fortunately, if it's more energy than the body needs, healthy cells ignore it anyway.
Yeah, which is amazing, amazing. Just an aside, if people are very interested in the adenosine and ATP as the inflammatory molecules, check out Dr. Navio's website. He's the, we talk about his cell danger response a lot. And these purinergic means the purines, which adenosine and ATP are, that's just the name of a chemical family, but that these receptors are involved in all kinds of inflammation, but especially maintaining chronic inflammation. So this is just fascinating how this is full circle. You know, we start with, as always, we start with the biochemistry, but we always wind up with the physics if we follow it far enough.
Well, the physics starts before the chemistry anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean,
eventually you have to back up to the physics.
Right. It's just fascinating how it all ties together. And but keep going. This is, we're not getting too complicated for people, but you probably have to listen to this a few times, but I think this is so important if you're going to go out there and just talk to your doctor or shop around and try to understand how to use these devices or how to pick them. You know, obviously Dr. Pollock's website and blogs is a very important place to start, but hopefully if you keep listening, you'll keep learning.
Well, and I only have 30 years of research.
Well,
30 years of working with magnetic fields. And I published the book that's behind me there called Power Tools for Health. And for those of you who are very science-minded, this book is really important because I have over 500 references that support the use of magnetic fields across a whole host of health conditions. And it talks about the mechanisms. So not only do you reduce inflammation, but you improve circulation, you reduce swelling in the tissues, you increase ATP production in the body. You stimulate RNA and DNA, you stimulate stem cells. So if you read the book, you'll see that there's over 25 different actions. So the actions of magnetic fields don't care about the label you put on the problem that you got in your body. Right? We try to define the problem based on the label we put on it, and we say, okay, well, now we got a label. Now we have to find a cure. We have to find a solution. And you read a ton of research that says, we now know what the mechanism is. Now let's go find the chemistry that will take care of this. Like, what? The chemistry is going to solve all problems?
No, I think this is one of the other issues that actually Dr. Navio talks about, the difference between understanding the pathogenesis, meaning like how did the injury happen? And in medicine, we kind of think that if we figure out how it happened, we can fix it. And that works sort of well for bullet wounds and broken legs, right. But it doesn't get us back to health. The direction is not the same. What got you sick, the reverse of that is doesn't get you back to health. But adding energy into the system is a way so the body can then choose its own path, which is healing.
And a metaphor, well, another example that I use all the time as well to explain magnetic field therapy in the context in which you need to think about it. It's not a panacea. It's just another method of getting the body to move in the direction you're trying to aim it to be moving. You need nutrients. You can't fix a body if it's depleted. Right. You have to have the supply. You can't remodel a house without the bricks and the mortar. You need the supplies.
Right.
You need a plan. So you have to have a genetic system that's working. You have to have a system in general that's working. And you have to have a blueprint for that. So the body's got to have its own basic resources in place. We supply the food. We supply the substrates for the building blocks of the body. But what's missing very often is the energy. You have to power all that. So if you're building a house, you got the bricks and the mortar, you got the plan, you got the workers, but you need the tools, and the tools can be either hand tools or power tools. And that's why I wrote my book, Power Tools for Health. Right? We're supplying the power tools. Now, you could do a lot more and a lot faster with tools that are essentially electrical, right, than you can with hand tools. And so the energy, the magnetic fields then supply the energy to the system to amplify the natural work that system should be doing that's become decayed and decrepit and out of balance and slowed down. And part of that is entropy.
Yeah. And what's so nice is that most of the devices, I hope we'll get to them in a few minutes, are things that people can use at home. And so you can be, you know, because the healing process happens day by day, not once a week.
Incredible. That's an incredibly potent and important point. And as a primary care doctor, and more recently, the last 15 years, a holistic physician, it's always a matter of making sure that people have all the right tools to do their own work. They have to do it, right? Yeah. And in conjunction with the tools you gave them. So magnetic fields are just part of a whole complex of things that you have to do on your own. If you repair a bone, if you break a bone, yeah, when does the bone heal? After you break?
Yeah.
You know, everybody says, well, 12 weeks. Okay, yeah, whatever. Say 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks. No. If you re-x-ray the fracture site, you'll still see the fracture site in 2 years. If it was healed, you wouldn't see the fracture site, right? And if you do an MRI another 2 years later, you'll still see the fracture site, because that's how long it takes for bone, at least, to heal. And the brain and the nervous system and ligaments, they all have their own healing cycles. And so we have to respect the capability of the body naturally to heal itself. And then when you damage it, as you said, you know, the deeper the damage, the worse the damage, the bigger the hole is you have to climb out of.
Yeah, it's a stuck pattern. I always say the body has a tendency to neurosis. You know, we tend to, the body gets stuck in what would be a self-healing or self-protective mode that's helpful in the acute situation. And then we forget, we don't get the message that the war is over. We keep fighting, you know, we keep the inflammation going when it should be turning down. And that's where chronic disease, in my mind, it develops, is when we don't finish the healing in an appropriate manner. And it usually needs energy. because it is one of the signals that it that the danger is over. And that's what's so fascinating about your tools that you're talking about.
Well, yes, and you absolutely need the energy. So if you suffer from entropy, if you get older, obviously you can't heal as well.
Right.
So entropy is the lack of energy in the body to maintain a physical body that took a lot of energy to put it there in the first place. And then it needs the energy to keep it there. And as we get older, clearly, or the more damage we get to our bodies,
yeah.
And I call aging death by a thousand cuts.
Yes.
The colds, the flus, the accidents, the tears, the sprains, and all of those insults to the body are just another sort of step down in the entropic process.
Yes, and you know, and we are there's more and more of us who are in that entropic process that you know, but we still have enough energy and these devices. So tell me, let's just talk about the various devices that are available, because I've played with a lot of them, but I, you know, what I've always lacked is your depth of understanding of how they work and where to best apply them. So teach me a little bit here. I'm really excited.
Unfortunately, on drpollock.com, we have a product comparison guide.
Ah.
So to go back to products, again, working with magnetic field therapies, I started out early on working with a very low intensity magnetic system, and I worked with it for probably about 4 or 5 years.
But which one was this?
That one happened to be at the time called the QRS.
Oh, the QRS. Okay, gotcha.
And so we have a bunch of devices that are in that ballpark called the Beamer, the QRS, the IMRS, the Medithera, the OMI. There's a bunch of machines that are
right.
Very, very low intensity. They're around 1 Gauss or less than 1 Gauss. But as I worked with them, the more people I saw, the more people started hearing about magnetic fields and wanted a solution to their health problems. The more I discovered these low intensity magnetic fields, while they stimulated the acupuncture points and meridians and made people feel better, they did almost no healing.
Okay.
Because they don't go deep enough. They don't have the energy to go deep enough into the body. They might help to heal the skin superficially, and they may stimulate the acupuncture points and meridians, which can help with some degree of healing, but they don't do enough. And so what you need then is you need a magnetic field that's much more directly acting to where you want to target it. So if you're trying to heal the brain, you need to treat the brain. If you're trying to heal the heart, you need to treat the heart with a sufficient intensity magnetic field. So over the years, I have had to acquire and test and use all kinds of equipment. Each piece of equipment basically fits a specific need. Right now, if you want to have a piece of equipment that's going to probably meet almost all your needs for the rest of your life, you're probably going to need what I call a magnetic sandwich.
Okay.
Right, or some people call it an electric taco. So it's a magnetic sandwich. Basically, you're laying between two layers of magnetic fields. So in scientific terms, it's called a Helmholtz coil. It's not okay. Exactly the same as a Helmholtz coil, but the idea is you're basically creating a Helmholtz coil-like structure, which for ease of explanation, I call it the magnetic sandwich. Now, when you're doing that, when you're laying between two magnetic fields based on the inverse square law, let's do it this way. It's probably easier. So the magnetic field, this is the peak, drops off like this, right? So by the time it reaches like 6 or 8 inches away, it's gone so far down that it's not very useful.
Yes.
But you got another one that's doing the same thing here. So what happens to those magnetic fields? They meet in the middle.
Right.
They don't go down to zero. Right. So now you're creating a much more defined, much more concentrated, much more uniform magnetic field in the center of the body. You're not leaving as much to chance.
Right.
Okay. What people do, human nature, is I want to sleep on my back. I'm going to treat myself for 15 minutes or 8 minutes or 10 minutes, and I'm done. I'm cooked. And the answer is you ain't seen nothing yet. So high-intensity magnetic fields that create the magnetic sandwich now do some really interesting work. I had a lady not too long ago who has a stage 4 breast cancer, about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. She had mets to her spine, mets to her ribs, mets to her liver, mets to her lung. 3 weeks on the magnetic sandwich. Now we're talking about a 10,000 Gauss magnetic field, potential.
Oh, okay. Right.
10,000. within 3 weeks, the imaging studies already began to show that the Mets started shrinking. Even in 3 weeks. Now, she was also doing all the other things that you need to do. She was changing her, she changed her diet. She changed her attitude. She was using all kinds of supplements. She was getting IV vitamin C and IV ozone and doing all sorts of other things that complement the magnetic fields. So all of these things work synergistically together.
Yes.
She was getting the triple taco, the triple, triple decker.
Yeah. And that is just, you know, as an aside, one of the difficulties in getting acceptance of these therapies is that the world medical acceptance is based on, you know, single variable experiments, which is, again, works well with drugs that act like bullets that have an effect that there's, you know, no, the body doesn't have choice in how it's going to react to. But as we use devices and interventions that allow the body to dance with, you usually need a multitude of them until the body picks the right actions. And it's just a different way of thinking. And it's so frustrating because you can't get conventional doctors to even look at these possibilities because how do we know what works?
Well, you know what? I don't know about you, but I've been triple educated since I left medical school. Right?
Yeah.
You can't sort of take what you learned from medical school, finish your residency, say, I'm done, I'm completed.
Right. You know nothing. Yeah.
And you can be, but I would run away from that kind of doctor. Because if you're not curious, you're not always asking yourself, how do I improve? How do I improve? What can I do better? This person didn't get better. On my watch, this person did not get better. What did I not do to help this person get better? And that meant that we had to go out and learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. I'm constantly learning new things. If you don't do that, you get bored and you burn out.
you're so right. I mean, I'm thinking we should start a club of the 70s, you know, the 70-year-old doctors who are still standing and working because we don't stop.
And enthusiastic.
Yes. Yes. You know, because you meet so many who are like in their 40s and, I don't want to see another patient. And, you know, it's like you just haven't kept thinking if you don't want to see another, if you don't want to learn something new today, because that's the patient that frustrated the hell out of you because you needed to learn something they needed.
Well, we talked about this too before we started.
Yeah.
I have three levels of doctors, the doctor, the physician, and the healer. So I think that the physician and the healer are, they ask questions. And they're not satisfied. I essentially call myself an unhappy doctor. And the reason I'm not happy is I'm not happy till I've solved your problem. And if I need to go out and get another degree, I'll do that. Or I need to talk to another expert. I need to talk to read more journals, you know, et cetera. Then I got to do that. And then I'm happier too. I go to bed and say, I've done my best. I'm not just putting the same old stuff on the same old wound, you know, day in, day out.
But anyway, this is another long discussion of, but I think it's just, you know, I think it's more personality than anything. It's just some of us, you know, love learning and love and don't like, and like to help, you know, and it's that combination that
really
makes it go. Yeah. It also requires what you've done is that digging deep, you know, you can't stop at the surface. And that's really impressive. So, but as we're going back to the devices, because I said they fascinate me as a better idea. So, you know, it's almost like, so like the low level devices kind of are probably really good for fairly healthy people in the sense that they're giving a little extra energy to the whole system and the system can pick and choose what it needs. But when you have part of the system that's really maybe semi offline, because my kind of one way I think of chronic illness is the body's almost given up on that area. You know, right. It's no longer putting as much information there. And so even if
trying to isolate it.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you're putting in low level information, it kind of just bounces off, you know, it goes around.
Right.
And so then
we don't, the magnetic field will not allow the body to do that.
Ah. Okay. If we get...
It's going to go through regardless of what the state is. Unless you actually put a metal shield in front of that part of the body, the magnetic field is going to go through there.
Well, it'll go through, but I just don't think the system has enough oomph to respond. But anyway, we don't know. So we don't know.
We don't know.
But I think when you start putting in more energy, then you start seeing shift.
Yeah.
And especially more direction. Because I always think of, you know, the frustrating thing about, good body work or good osteopathy or chiropractic is not just the adjustment, but picking the order in which you treat.
Right.
And I have and the same thing with acupuncture. You know, I mean, that what makes the great acupuncturist is knowing, you know, which point to start with, you know. And
I was thinking about magnetic fields.
Yes, let me hear.
I said that there are 25 mechanisms, and there are more, but there are 25 mechanisms. Okay. I don't decide which mechanism the body's going to use.
Right.
The body decides. So one of the first things you'll see, for example, is an improvement in circulation, almost immediately. You get a decrease in symptoms, almost immediately. Edema reduces dramatically, quickly. So the body will take all the actions of the magnetic fields, basically, that can be stimulated in the body. It will take and pick off the low-hanging fruit, and then it'll go deeper, and then it'll go deeper, and then it'll go deeper. So at one point, you're starting off at a sensory level where you say you feel something.
Right.
Eventually, you get to a point where you don't notice anything anymore. But just because you don't notice it doesn't mean it's not working. So it's working deeper in the body. And it's basically the body is then delayering itself because it's got the right tools to be able to do that. And they're not so precise. You don't want to be that precise.
No, exactly. Because then we get back into the drug model, thinking we're fixing the one thing.
Or we think that we're outsmarting the body. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, which is never a good idea. Yeah, no, I always say leave it to the body. But when you pick devices, I mean, but again, once you get above that low background, like, okay, just going to like put a little energy in as you're going up for home use, because it sounds like, I mean, your sandwich therapy, is that something that you have people be doing at home as well? Or is that
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I think you're going in the right direction. I agree with you. If you're basically healthy, you can get a whole body magnetic system and you don't have to spend $6,000 to do that.
Right.
And some of them are around that $5,000, $6,000. You don't have to spend that kind of money because they're low intensity anyway. So they're not going to go very deep. They're going to work superficially in the body. They'll help you. They're better than nothing, but they're not enough. So based on the adenosine molecule and the optimal magnetic field being 15 Gauss, if you're going to treat a tennis elbow, then all you need is 15 Gauss.
Right.
Maybe you need 100. So then there are portable devices that are around 200 Gauss peak intensity, and you could choose how much intensity you want to deliver. So you could use that for shoulders and for elbows and for superficial things. You could use it for headaches. You could use it for muscle strains in the back of the head.
Okay.
And they can actually be used at certain frequencies to cause entrainment of the brain. So there are devices at that level of intensity, like the Flex Pulse, for example, that you can tune to specific brain frequencies. So you can wake up, you can go to sleep, you can relax, and you can stay asleep. You can pick one of the programs that will do one of those things for you through entrainment. Now, they're strong enough then that 200 Gauss or 100 Gauss to be able to do some degree of entrainment. But if you want to do really strong entrainment, you need a much higher intensity magnetic field. So I basically balance them out into local treatments versus systemic treatments or whole body treatments.
Okay.
All you're treating is a pancreas or all you're treating is your brain. You can get by with a local treatment system, but you have to get the right intensity.
Okay.
As I mentioned, if you just cross the skull, you need 4,000 Gauss.
Right.
If you're going to treat the whole heart, you're going to need about 4,000 Gauss. If you're going to treat the whole liver, that's a big organ, the liver, then you're going to need a bigger magnetic field, wider, and also goes deep enough. Again, probably at least 6,000 Gauss. So knowing that, then you decide, do I want whole body at what intensity? Do I want local and what intensity? Or we now have available this magnetic sandwich system that is about 10,000 Gauss, and you can do all of them. You can do whole body. You can do part of the whole body. You can do one below, one above, or you could do one below and one on another part of the body. So you have combinations of ways that you can actually treat the body for the same amount of money. Now, fortunately, we work with a manufacturer to be able to get an amazing discount, and that system is on sale right now. So it's really a great price.
Okay. And the name of this system?
It's called PARMEDS, PARMEDS, PARMEDS Ultra Flash.
Okay.
And that's my go-to system for osteoporosis, for arthritis in many parts of the body. Most cancer patients should be on that device because, again, with cancer, at least from my perspective, and people don't like me to say this, but once you've gotten off the edge of the cliff with your treatments in conventional model, you ain't done yet. And I hate the concept of survivorship. Right? It's like I survived my victimhood. Right? Because you're not. Cancer is a lifetime condition. If you got it in the first place, it was there because of the condition of your body allowed it to happen. And that means if you don't remove that condition, it's going to come back, or something else is going to come back. So in this sense, if you do whole body magnetic therapy, then you're stimulating the whole body to maintain its health for the rest of your life, whether you know that it needs help or not.
Right. I like that. And as far as like local, like things like, significant inflammation, rheumatoid arthritis, or any kind of those joint autoimmune inflammations.
By my definition, autoimmune is a systemic problem.
Yeah, it is. Totally. It's inflammation. Yeah.
So you need a whole body system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, people with rheumatoid arthritis, their hands are a mess.
Right.
But actually, many of their joints are involved. It's not just their hands. Their hands are the worst or the most obvious.
Right.
And besides that, if you have inflammation in your buttocks or your toe or your foot, then it's taking energy away from your body being able to help you with your hands. So if you're helping the whole body to be healthy, you're lifting, rising tide lifts all boats, then everything gets lifted up. And the rheumatoid arthritis is going to be dealt with better by the extra tools the body now has available.
Right. And as far as patients, we have a lot of people with very hair trigger immune systems and, you know, mast cell activation and issues of that flavor. How does the body respond, you know, when you have that to the pulse, to the PEMFs?
There's some debate in the magnetics world, and usually the debate is triggered by the people who are selling one thing versus another. Right? Everybody's got their camp based on what they
sell.
So the debate is whether frequencies are better or high intensity is better. So a frequency magnetic device, like the low intensity ones that we discussed, are like a song. That's a low frequency device.
Right.
Or low intensity frequency. So here's a high intensity impulse device.
Okay.
So that pulse is going boom, boom through the body.
Right.
The more information you present to these inflamed nervous systems, the harder it is for them to deal with it. It's too much information too fast.
Right.
So a lower intensity pulse system tends to be less reactive for people.
Okay. That's fascinating. Okay. Yep. Right. Because, you know, this is why I'm very interested, because the only, you know, I said when I was talking before, we about 10 years ago, we used some of the low intensity, high frequency systems. And we found in our sensitive patients, they were too much. They did trigger them. And they did great for the healthier people.
There's two reasons for that. And one is because of the frequencies. But the other reason is you're just stimulating too much of the body at the same time.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Right?
So that's why you have to decide, you want local or systemic. And if you do local, then you basically are going to gradually increase the intensity and the treatment time to adjust to the body. The body's going to tell you how fast you can go. Now, clearly, certain areas of the body are much more susceptible than others. The brain, the cardiac plexus, the solar plexus, sacral plexus, all these plexi, plexuses, are much more sensitive because there's much more information going traffic going through them. So if I treat it, if I treat a foot or an ankle or a knee, I'm going to get a lot more, lot less activation of the whole body than I will, again, those body cavities. So extremely sensitive people, I would go to a very local area.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Increase the time and intensity, then increase the area. Increase the time intensity, then increase the area, time intensity. Because you've already then started a process, a cascading process in the body, that the body's now learning how to deal with this information. And it begins to rebalance itself. So that rebalancing process can be exquisitely, excruciatingly slow.
Yes.
Exquisitely, excruciatingly fast.
Yeah, but as long as we have a way of modulating the speed and the response
and the intensity and response
and the intensity, then I mean that was my problem with the whole body systems. There wasn't a low enough level that allowed us to be gentle enough. Yeah, with a really sensitive patient, you know, and so this is great because
sometimes in these patients is I've actually treated the water. And had them drink the water for a while.
No, absolutely.
The water is more absorbable by the body. And so therefore you're already hydrating at least the body. And I have in my new book, and when people buy some of these devices, they will get what's called the low and slow protocol.
Okay.
Deal with this. I don't want people jumping in the deep end of the pool. Even though they have a low intensity system, you need to find out what your body's going to do. The metaphor that I use is you don't get off the couch and run a marathon tomorrow. You could try. I don't want to see you a day later. I want to be there to hear you screaming and yelling and crying and gnashing of teeth and so on. So athletic training is like that. You gradually increase the amount of training and you may increase and you may have to back off. You increase and you back off. It's like interval training. You increase and you back off. Finally, you achieve the goal you're going after. Well, dealing with overwhelmingly ill people is no different, right? You apply a stimulus, you apply a treatment, you see the results, and you may have to back off some. You may not necessarily stop it. Sometimes what happens, unfortunately, people are so sensitive to these things that anything that's even positive can be perceived as a threat.
Yes, that's what we see all the time, right? That self-preservation thing takes over.
The reflex, yes.
Yeah, the reflex. I mean, that's why.
You can't distinguish the difference.
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, those retraining things, you know, like the DNRS and the amygdala path system, you know, Gupta and Annie Hopper. I mean, these are where sometimes we have to go with people so they can quiet the fear response because it's all self-protection. It's not bad. It's just doesn't know friend from foe.
Become over exaggerated.
Yeah. And that's a hard
thing. Self-training, self-entraining.
Yeah. No, it is so difficult. To learn how to control that response, especially when, unfortunately, many of the chronically ill people have been told that they're just crazy. And so the idea that you have to do something mentally can press a button. But we have to remember is that, wait a minute, the brain does control everything. And we sometimes have to go there. But so just for, and this is a point really, it's funny. Today, we didn't really talk about mycotoxins when I've done this several times, because I want people to see is that there's lots of ways in to relax the system, to help the system heal. Because remember is that everyone's exposed to different levels of toxins in the environment. And it's our body's response that is often the issue. No, we got to have less of these toxins in the system. That would be good. Our patients are the canaries. They're letting us know we're creating a very unsafe world for everyone. But still, if we can get your body to respond with a little less noise, you'll have a much happier life.
And that's a key. And I can't tell you, there's a section in my book on infectious agents, fungi, parasites, viruses, bacteria, and so on. And magnetic field therapy has been found to actually help the body to heal itself because the body does the work. If you can use a magnetic field or you can use a frequency-based field to kill a bug, there's a really good chance you're going to kill a lot of good things along the way.
Oh, okay.
Right? If it's strong enough to disrupt an organism, blow it apart, like radiation. What's going to happen along the way?
Well, that's a good question. So that is a good concern. That's something that is something that you are worried about when people are using these frequency devices.
Well, no, not really, because I don't think they can do that, because they're not at that level of intensity, and the frequencies are not that short that you can burst open a cell.
Okay.
There's something called electroporation where you do exactly that.
Yeah, yes, yes.
No, what we're doing with magnetic field therapy is we're helping the body to deal with the infection. We're helping the body to respond better. Leukocytes track much better with magnetic field stimulation. They do a better job of hunting down the infectious organisms. And if their organisms are insisted, CYST, insisted, then they're more likely to break down the barrier that allows the body then to get in at the organism.
Right.
But if you do nothing else, if all you're doing is just keeping the rest of the body healthier,
the body. You just maybe one last little thought that might not be real, but you know, they do use, you know, when you know, that biofilm formation, you know, we really started learning about biofilms from petroleum engineers, you know, people who were dealing with flows in pipes, because that's where they have a lot of problems with biofilms, and electrical charges will help disrupt.
And so will magnetic fields.
Yep. So this could be very interesting.
Why would magnetic fields disrupt the biofilm? Because it's inducing an electrical charge. It's not, you know, electrocuting the biofilm.
Right. No, not at all.
It's
causing
the charges to be built up around the biofilm that begins to disrupt it.
Magnetic
fields have been found in clean water.
Yep. No, this is why I said we're going to wrap up now, but I'm realizing you're another one I want to get together. I've got a few people that I've been talking to during this summit, and I want to put us all together with Dr. Pollack, you know, the fourth phase of water, Jerry. Yeah. I really think that would be a fascinating discussion and just, you know, just help, you know, let the world see how this is affecting every aspect of life at the very basic level, which is water and flow and energy.
Magnetic fields, obviously, when they go through the body, they're affecting water.
This is it. But so anyways, Dr. Paul, thank you so much. I just want to remind people, like, really, you know, at your website, you know, is the place to look, especially for your books and your products. I mean, because the thing I'm interested in is that you're someone who's used everybody's, and it looks like has put together the one that you feel is the most effective.
Right now, there may be better down the road, but right now, for most people, for especially people with really significant chronic problems, that sandwich effect is probably going to be the most powerful. But sensitivity has to be considered.
Yes. So make sure you read that section before you turn the machine on. Yes.
Yes. Read the going slow protocols, and of course,
going slow. And more importantly, you know, bring it to your doctor and teach them. You know, because that's how we learn. There's so much information out there, and if your doctor doesn't want to hear information from you, you probably should think about finding another one.
Well, and I do recommend, if you're going to go visit your doctor, you should bring the book with you.
Yes. Yes.
There are 500 references in the book. And if a doctor's not willing to look at it, then, as you said, I think they're not willing to.
Yeah, you need a little different help. Anyways, on that note, really, again, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Gordon. Likewise.